Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
God bless the great state of Iowa.
I want to congratulate Ted, and I want to congratulate all of the incredible candidates.
What Iowa has begun tonight is a political revolution.
I am so thrilled that I'm coming to New Hampshire after winning Iowa.
Some of the voices in the aftermath of the Iowa caucuses held last night. What actually happened last night? I mean, everyone's doing the political calculus. There's a lot writing on this, but what was the biggest story to come out of there? Was it the near tie between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders? Was it the fact that Donald Trump, in spite of all the polls and his own predictions and really the obsession of the press, didn't win the first of these primaries of the caucuses here as we head towards the White House in 2016? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about the Iowa caucuses. Joining us to do so, Mark Hemingway. He's a regular guest and he's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me again.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome to you.
It's great to be here with you.
Both of you, beginning with you, Molly, what happened last night? What's the biggest story that came out of the Iowa caucuses last night?
Well, I'm gonna take the pretty obvious one. I think Ted Cruz's victory was a really important victory. He ran an incredible campaign. He's not getting enough credit for what a good campaign he's running. And he was expected to lose the Iowa caucus. He ended up winning handily. And this was a very important defeat for Donald Trump. Not that Donald Trump can't still do well, but if he had won Iowa, it would have been very difficult to stop him. So this was significant.
Mark, same question to you. What happened last night?
Well, actually, I would disagree slightly and say the biggest story actually is Sanders. Technically, he didn't beat Hillary Clinton, but the reality is if we looked at the raw vote totals and or he had won two of the six coin tosses for how they decided disputed districts in Iowa, he would have officially won the Iowa caucus. So that's a huge deal when you look at it, because there's been a lot of attention paid to Donald Trump's supposed radicalism. But on the actual issue of politics and policy, Donald Trump is actually not that far outside of the mainstream. In fact, he's to the left of the Republican Party on a number of significant issues, whereas Bernie Sanders is a full-bore, full-blown socialist. And the fact that half the party in a place like Iowa is embracing this guy, and it should be much, much bigger news.
Okay, let's focus a little bit on the Democratic side of it just for a minute, and that is, I guess the big question everyone has with respect to Bernie Sanders is, in 2008, Barack Obama won the caucus in Iowa, beating Hillary Clinton. That was considered an upset there. Does Bernie Sanders, and as you said, Mark, Bernie didn't beat Hillary, but he came as close as he can without doing so. Molly, what do you think? Does Bernie have the ability to do what Barack Obama did back in 2008, which is launch a national campaign from Iowa like this?
I don't know about that. I think Hillary Clinton still has the advantage in the Democratic system is set up with its superdelegates and whatnot to make it very difficult for an insurgent to take over the establishment pick. And I would just add on to what Mark was saying about Sanders' victory. Hillary Clinton is a terrifically bad candidate. She should have walked away with 80% of the vote. She has all the money. She has all the connections. She has all the background. It's been all but a coronation, according to the media, that she almost lost. I mean, she essentially lost. It's really speaks to what a weak and horrible candidate she is. Now, having said that, it's still going to be very difficult for an avowed socialist to convince people who have any degree of education or knowledge about how the economy works or how the world works, that he has the right prescription for the problems of crony capitalism. I mean, Sanders has correctly identified problems with collusion between big government and big business. It's just that his prescription is actually somehow would make things even worse.
Mark, I wonder, what does Hillary Clinton have to do going forward, especially facing the South? Because She's touting herself as a progressive who gets things done. That was her line last night. She wants to be included in that progressive camp. But how does she do that going forward towards the South?
Well, I think she's counting on the black vote coming in big for her. I mean, Bernie Sanders being a elderly white senator from Vermont, his socialist politics aren't particularly grounded in a Democratic grassroots, I think, that appeal to black voters. And the Clintons have a long history of support of black voters. So she's counting on them coming through for her in South Carolina and, you know, sort of putting the kibosh on that. But like Molly said, I mean, the Democratic system for the primary system is basically rigged with the superdelegates and things like that. And already we've seen the leadership of the Democratic Party basically go out of their way to try and impede Bernie Sanders. But also, you know, again, Molly's right that I don't think that a lot of educated Democrats are going to go for Bernie's crazy ideas on Medicare for All and some of his more radical proposals. But there's also no question that Hillary is co-opting Sanders by moving to the left. And what this says about the current state of the Democratic Party and what it's going to do to our national political debate in terms of moving everything way to the left remains to be seen.
Do you think, Molly, that that Bernie can survive the South to continue at least challenge Hillary there?
I think that Bernie's best chance right now will be if Hillary Clinton is indicted. And I know that those of us who have been around for many decades of the Clintons think that there is no scandal that a Clinton can't survive. But she does face serious problems with every day's new revelations about how she kept closely held government secrets on an unapproved homebrew server. This is not over for her, and I think the Democratic Party probably wishes they had someone other than, you know, a 75-year-old socialist to come in and save the party if she is unable to continue her run.
So which party leaders do you think lose the most sleep? The Democratic Party with the candidate Sanders or the Republican Party with candidate Trump? What do you think, Molly?
I think this is why Iowa was so significant. Everything we knew about the polling showed that Donald Trump was winning and he was going to keep on winning and he was going to do better and better. And I think that people were rightly concerned about someone who has no or very little fidelity to the Republican Party. It made sense that Republican Party officials were worried about his strength. I think they're probably sleeping much more easily tonight, although they are certainly not out of the woods, and they have still failed to understand the mood of the electorate. The many people in the Republican Party leadership are still pushing people who do not fit with the electorate, who want drastic, radical changes, are sick and tired of being fed the same spin about what can happen in the government, and I don't know if the Republican Party is smart enough to wake up to that.
I just want to pile in, and Molly made one sort of point in passing and really drive it home, because really nobody is talking about this, which is that the polls in Iowa were off badly last night, and they were off terribly in 2014, and yet so much of the media coverage is driven by polls. And not just that, I mean, it has tangible consequences, especially in the Republican primary, where because it was a crowded field, they were determining who got space on the debate stage based on their showing in the polls. So I just, you know, would caution listeners out there to think about that for a moment. It's something like every one of the seven polls in the final week that was done in Iowa showed Donald Trump winning by an average of nearly 5 points, and he lost by 3.5. I mean, that is a huge swing, even by, you know, the normal unreliable margin of error standards in polling. So as we dive headlong into 2016, you know, please, everyone remember that polls are a terrible way to decide how we should examine this race and how it's being covered.
So, Mark, the same question I asked Molly a few moments ago, which of the party leaders are losing most sleep, the Democratic Party with candidate Sanders or the Republicans with candidate Trump?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer. I mean, at this point in time, I would say that Ted Cruz shows that Donald Trump is not a runaway train. He's not invincible. The Republicans are breathing a little easier today. But having said that, on the Democratic side, you know, I don't think anybody is disputing that Hillary Clinton is the more than likely going to be the nominee for Democrats. The issue there is whether or not something, you know, bad is going to happen, like, you know, Molly talked about with an indictment or something where they're left scrambling to find somebody else because all they have is Bernie Sanders. But there's also a larger issue there, which is that Obama was so polarizing that the electoral defeats in the midterms in 2010, which that was the biggest victory for a major political party in the U.S. since the end of World War II. And 2014 was also just a colossal wipeout, such that the Democrats have no bench. I mean, they have no big, you know, roster of candidates waiting in the wings like Republicans have. So if anything happens to Hillary, you know, they're going to have to be scrambling to do something. And if, God forbid, they lose this election, you know, who's going to be the next Democratic candidate? I mean, nobody has any idea.
Mark Hemingway is our guest, along with Molly Hemingway. Mark is of the Weekly Standard and Molly of the Federalist. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses last night. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Listen to the best of the Church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Mark and Molly Hemingway are our guests. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses. Mark is senior writer for the Weekly Standard and Molly is senior editor for the Federalist. I got the same question I had for Mark before the break here for you, Molly. Who were the biggest winners and losers last night?
Yeah, Ted Cruz really pushed back a lot on everybody was going after him. He decisively won. It shows the maturity of his campaign. Donald Trump still had a good showing. Marco Rubio obviously did very well positioning himself headed into New Hampshire. And I think that there are other things you can look at that are interesting, but it gets a lot into who's not doing well. When you consider how much Jeb Bush spent in Iowa and how little he has to show for it, even think about how much Rubio spent in Iowa and he only eked out a third place finish, I think this might mean he's not as strong as a lot of D.C. establishment types think he is. He spent more than Trump. He spent more than Cruz. He only got third place. And he, you know, his whole message is that he's the most electable candidate. I think he's going to need to start showing more actual voter support in the polls. But, you know, also, you know, Ben Carson's still getting more than all of those other people who are running, all those governors and whatnot, who should be considered much more electable than he is. He got 10% of the vote or something like that. And Rand Paul had a very good ground game and was able to pick up some support coming out of Iowa as well.
Mark, same question to you on the GOP side. Biggest winners, well, biggest losers?
I would say that in terms of losers, I would actually add, I mean, it was disaster in a lot of ways for Trump. I mean, he's not out of this race by a long shot, and polls, again, word of caution, show that he's going to win New Hampshire handily. But, you know, keep in mind, you know, Donald Trump's entire candidacy up until this point has basically been a giant tautology where He's winning the Republican race because he's winning in the polls, and it keeps reminding everybody that he's winning. And the fact that we finally got to a poll that, like, really mattered, you know, where we could actually tabulate it and what people thought, And it turns out that Donald Trump wasn't as strong as people were predicting. Well, I think that really cuts into Donald Trump's sort of mythology and the aura around him that he's used to drive so much of the free media coverage he's gotten and all the other things that have helped him. So that was really bad. I'm a little bit more bullish on Rubio than Molly is, at least strictly talking about his electoral chances. Molly's right. He did spend a lot of money. But on the other hand, that's not the narrative coming out of it. And people aren't really picking up on that so much, even if that is a potent observation. The reality is that Marco Rubio significantly exceeded expectations, according to the polls. And and now that he has done that, the only reason why Trump has been doing so well in large part is because the field is so fractured. If you actually, you know, add up the votes in New Hampshire for the quote-unquote establishment candidates like Bush, Kasich, you know, Rubio, et cetera, you get well over 50% of the electorate in that state. If Rubio can consolidate that more traditional Republican vote and force some of those candidates out of the race with a strong showing in New Hampshire, then he's really well positioned to consolidate the traditional Republican vote in the primary and just sort of grind it out as the primary season progresses. While Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are fighting over the more conservative elements of the Republican base.
Molly, which GOP candidates that are still standing here have a truly legitimate chance of being the GOP nominee, in your opinion?
Okay. I don't think we need to get ahead of ourselves too much because we've only had one state weigh in, and it's not even a representative state of the vast majority of states. I think we can just figure out what happens maybe after South Carolina, we can really make a determination. Now, having said that, it's obvious that when it comes to actual support, you've got people who are committed Republicans who are ready for drastic change. They're getting behind Cruz. You have the people who are just fed up and ready to divorce, essentially, and those are the Trump voters. And then you have a lot that can shake out in the more establishment lane, people who are more content with the way things have been going. I think Rubio is an ideal pick for those people because he speaks a little bit to the unrest that people have in the rest of the party while still being very palatable and appealing as a candidate. But anything could happen in New Hampshire. I mean, John Kasich could have a good showing, and who is he? I mean, he could come out of nowhere. I wouldn't leave it past people who are just dissatisfied with both or with all, you know, Cruz, Trump, and Rubio to start trying to figure out who they want that would be different. So it's not too late for many of them. Now, I don't know why Santorum is still in the race. Huckabee finally left. If Kasich can't do something in New Hampshire, he has absolutely no business being anywhere near this race. I think if Jeb Bush really wanted to hurt Donald Trump, he would get behind Rubio or just otherwise exit the race. So, you know, we're starting to make decisions. We're starting to winnow down, but we still have people still have a chance to make a shot and make a go for it.
On the GOP side, Mark, who do you anticipate will drop out of this race by the end of the month?
Well, like I said, it's a race right now to consolidate the so-called establishment lane. So, if Kasich, Christie and Jeb don't have a really good showing in Iowa, all three of those people are going to face enormous pressure to get out of the race. Now, Bush may have such a large war chest, and Kasich actually isn't doing too bad financially either, that they may try and hang on a bit longer. But I think for the good of the party, a lot of people who have influence will be trying to get them out of the race. To clear a path for Rubio if he has a good showing in New Hampshire, and it seems like he's poised to do that based on his showing in Iowa. I guarantee you that based on his exceeding expectations in Iowa, already a lot of the GOP money men who have been sort of divided among all these candidates are already, you know, refocusing their efforts on Rubio based on his proven performance last night. So we'll see. You know, I think it'll become fairly obvious pretty soon that those guys don't have the people willing to write checks for them if they don't, you know, really put in a good showing in New Hampshire.
Molly, Ted Cruz, he likes to say it's a two-person race. Is he right about that?
Yeah, he would love it for it to be a two-person race because he fares very well if it's just between him and Trump. I mean, the vast majority of Republican voters are not comfortable with Trump and would vote for Trump in that situation. But I think what you're seeing is people are still looking for the ideal candidate. They're they're open to other possibilities. And that is why Rubio's showing in Iowa is significant, even if it took a lot of money and a lot of help from the media. He did have a good showing, and I think that Cruz is going to have to make a case for why people shouldn't go for someone with fairly similar political views as he has in Rubio, if Rubio is a much more appealing candidate on, you know, the on just in terms of being appealing and a good debater and whatnot. So he's going to have to fight off that threat from Rubio, and he would only wish that it were a two-person candidate race for real.
So I will say this about Cruz, and it's something to keep in mind after last night, which is that what he did in the state of Iowa in terms of campaign organization, how he ran his campaign, was darn near flawless. And it showed real strength, real creativity as a politician and a leader in terms of how he was running his campaign. So even though, like, you know, I spelled out the conventional wisdom on, you know, Rubio consolidating the traditional Republican support and, you know, just pulling it out over the course of the primary season, the reality is that Ted Cruz showed some strength and ingenuity last night that makes it impossible to underestimate him at this point. You know, it's very possible that Ted Cruz is canny enough and got a great enough organization that he will find a way to avoid this trap of being in a three-person race where he and Donald Trump are cannibalizing each other. So don't count out Ted Cruz in this scenario by a long shot. His showing was really impressive on multiple levels last night.
A couple more questions. You raised the prospect of an indictment for Hillary Clinton. I agree with you, Molly. That's, I think, the bulletproof. But if it were to happen, does Joe Biden jump back in that race? Is he drafted?
I wonder, I was actually going to look into seeing how late he can jump in, or not just Joe Biden, but Elizabeth Warren definitely should have run. She's like the perfect meld between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. She would have done so well this year. But I think it might be getting too late to even make a go of it. So I'm sure Biden regrets not having jumped in. I'm sure a lot of people wish he would have to save the party from the mess that it's going through right now. And it really is a mess, even though the media don't like to cover what's happening there. It is something of a disaster for them. It's not just even that the two main candidates right now are so weak. It's that they don't really have much of a bench heading into coming elections and whatnot. So if he can get in, I think he should be at least getting the organization together.
Okay, final question, first for Mark, then for Molly. Crystal ball, who wins in New Hampshire on the Republican-Democrat side?
I think Trump is going to win in New Hampshire. I mean, again, I don't trust the polls, but he's so far ahead in so many polls that even if the polls are off significantly, he's probably still going to win. The question is, though, is if Trump pulls out another victory where, even if he pulls out a victory, if he doesn't exceed expectations and, in fact, has to lower them again, whether or not that's going to continue to hamstring his candidacy going forward. So I mean, it's probably Trump in New Hampshire. And then on the Democratic side, again, there's same deal. Bernie Sanders has been ahead by 20 points or more in the last big round of polls. I mean, he, for whatever reason, they sort of love his maverick-y ways in New Hampshire, and you know, he's familiar with the state, but Vermont being not too far away. So it's not really, I'd be really shocked if there's an outcome other than those two.
And what do you say, Molly?
I think that Trump needs to monitor expectations. I think one of the problems that he had in Iowa was that it's actually quite difficult to caucus, and so many of his supporters are not even people who are conventionally Republican voters. This might have been their first caucus. It was very difficult for them to show up, to stay there. There were reports of people saying, now, can I just cast a ballot and leave? No, it takes a long, you know, you're kind of stuck for the evening. Whereas in New Hampshire, it's just a much more conventional election process. It'll be much easier to vote. Also, in Iowa, you have to admit to other people that you're supporting Trump, whereas in New Hampshire, you can vote in the privacy of your own booth, and you don't have to tell anybody that you're for him. I wouldn't be surprised if he does stronger than people are expecting there. I think, in fact, the big question will be more what happens other than Trump in the Republican primary in New Hampshire. And I would be curious to see, you know, can Christie make a movement? Is Kasich going to be strong? Will Rubio shut it down? If he really consolidates all that establishment support, he's going to be looking pretty golden. And yes, I agree, Sanders will win New Hampshire. And the question for him will really be how strongly can he win? Because he's going to have to head into some pretty difficult southern states versus Hillary.
Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for The Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you for being our guest.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You can read Mark and Molly's columns under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Folks, Issues Etc. has been brought to you in part today by Concordia University Wisconsin Online. They offer 50 online educational options, making it easy for you to get your associate's, your bachelor's, or your master's degree. Just look for the Concordia University Wisconsin Online logo at issuesetc.org. They will even waive your application fee when you enter the promo code ISSUES, Concordia University, Wisconsin, online. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to continue our weekly series on Martin Luther and the Reformation. We're going to take up a moment, really it comes down to about a week in Luther's life, where he arrived at the city of Worms. He was there, having been invited, then disinvited, then invited again by the very emperor of the Holy Roman Empire to a meeting called the Diet, where he said those famous words, or at least he said, "God help me, here I stand." I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.